is going to be calling. Are you ready to go?
Sure. We're going to do a co-presentation today. So this session is going to, we are going to discuss the proposed changes to the IFRS taxonomy content that was identified as the result of the analysis of the common reporting practice for disclosures related to fair value measurement required by IFRS 13. So today, we are not going to go through every single slide, but we would like to give you a high-level overview of the proposed changes to leave enough time for, I hope, very lively discussion. So if you have any questions, it probably will be better to leave them until the end of the presentation, which we hope is going to be quite short. So IFRS 13 includes a number of disclosures, but today our focus will be mainly on the sensitivity analysis and some data model choices. However, we do plan to bring some more discussion on the IFRS 13 disclosures at the future call. At the end of the session, we would also like to ask you about any ideas for the future common practice analysis that we might need to conduct in order to be able to provide more elements and avoid extensions. So with that, I will hand over to Karlin to just walk you through the slides and the proposals.
Hello. So let's start with the sensitivity analysis, which starts on slide 7. And so just to give a bit of background, the main purpose of this disclosure is to explain to investors how sensitive the fair value of certain assets and liabilities is to changes in the inputs that we use to measure that fair value. And IFRS 13 requires a narrative description of sensitivity of the fair value measurement for all fair value measurements and requires a quantitative sensitivity analysis for financial instruments. And then on slide 8, you can see the current elements, the current line items we've got in the IFRS taxonomy for the sensitivity analysis. And the next slide, slide 9, as well as the appendix, show tagged examples that show the use of the current line items and axes that we've got in the IFRS taxonomy today. Then slides 10 and 11, they provide a summary of the 5 possible changes that the staff have identified in the course of the sensitivity analysis. And I'll go through the 5 changes in a bit of detail, and then I suggest after that I'll open up for discussion of the 5 changes together because they're quite interrelated. Then 2 things I would like to mention up front. So first of all, while we were developing our suggestions, one thing we did was that we looked at the IFRS taxonomy modelling for similar sensitivity analyses in other IFRS standards. So we've got one in IS 19, employee benefits, and one in IFRS 17, insurance contracts. And in most of the cases, our suggestions are consistent with that modelling for the other standards, but we've highlighted similarities and differences throughout the slides. And then a second thing I wanted to highlight is that all of our suggested changes are additions to the IFRS taxonomy. So we would be retaining the existing elements that I've shown you on slide 8. So let's start with possible change 1, which is on slide 12. So one thing that we observed while looking at the sample of entities was that entities commonly report both their quantitative and their narrative sensitivity analysis disaggregated by an observable input. And there's an example of on the slide of a quantitative sensitivity analysis disaggregated by input. And the issue is, today, you cannot tag a disclosure like that using the IFRS taxonomy without using extensions. And that's why on the next slide, we suggest adding a significant unobservable inputs axis to tag information like that that's disaggregated by an observable input. Now, in the taxonomy, we've already got line items for significant unobservable inputs for a different IFRS 13 disclosure, which we'll come on to later. And our suggestion is to use those line items as the members for this new significant unobservable inputs axis. Then moving on to possible change 2. So what is the issue there? Sort of towards the bottom of the slide, we've got one of the current line items that we have in the IFRS taxonomy. can see it says increase, decrease in fair value measurement due to change in one or more unobservable inputs. It doesn't say what direction that change in inputs is in. It doesn't say whether that's an increase or a decrease in inputs. Whereas when we looked at the sample, we noticed that when entities do their sensitivity analysis by changing one unobservable input at a time, they would specify, for example, this is the possible increase in fair value that is due to a possible decrease in unobservable input X. So in other words, entities, they would specify what the direction is of the relationship between the inputs and the fair value. And so sort of inspired by the modeling in IFRS 19 and IFRS 17, what we're suggesting is on the next slide, slide 15, to add these two new line items that would capture that direction of the relationship. And so the difference is in the second half of the label, where you can see we now say due to reasonably possible increase in unobservable input or decrease in unobservable input. Then possible change three. So currently the IFRS taxonomy only contains a text element to tag the description of how the effect on fair value is calculated, so how you've done the sensitivity analysis. But we've observed that entities commonly quantify the change in unobservable input that they've used to calculate the effect on the fair value, as shown on the slide there in orange. And then when we looked in more detail at how entities would disclose the change in inputs, we observed that they do it in two different ways. So what we called absolute changes in the inputs and relative changes in the inputs. And that's illustrated in the table on slide 17. And we've got a rather straightforward example on the first row for the unobservable input expected cash flows. So that's an amount in euros, and you can either express the change as an absolute change, so for example, an increase by 2 million euros, or you could say we have an increase by 5% in expected cash flows. But then that distinction between absolute and relative changes becomes a bit more tricky when you've got an unobservable input that's already, where the value is already a percentage, so for example, a discount rate. And then again, it's illustrated that for a discount rate, an absolute 2% increase would be an increase, for example, from 8% to 10%, whereas a relative 2% increase would be an increase from 8% to 8.16%, so multiplied by 1.02. And then sometimes entities make clear what they mean by using for the wording 200 basis points to clarify that they mean an absolute change, but they don't always... They're not always that clear in their disclosures. And we think that it's necessary that the tagging clearly indicates what type of change the entity is disclosing. And that is why we are suggesting to introduce two separate sets of line items to tag the absolute and the relative changes, which are shown on slide 18. And so for the absolute changes, we would have a set of elements that use a decimal item type, and for the relative changes, we would have the percent item type elements. Then possible change four. Another thing we've observed looking at the sample is that entities disclose the effect on, or the possible effect on fair value split into the possible effect on profit or loss and the possible effect on OCI. And that's why we are suggesting we introduce two separate line items, one for OCI, one for profit or loss, for each element that we have to tag the increase in the fair value. So that would mean we already have three elements in the taxonomy to tag the change in the fair value. So for each of those three, we would add two more elements for OCI and profit or loss. And those are shown on slide 20. And then as part of possible change two, we are suggesting to introduce two more line items. And for each of those two, we would also be introducing two line items, one for profit or loss and one for OCI, which are shown on slide 21. And then finally, the last possible change, change 5. So the existing line items that we've got in the taxonomy for the sensitivity analysis, they're all in this big table or in several big tables together with many other IFRS 13 disclosures. And we've observed that entities, normally when they disclose a sensitivity analysis, it's either a separate table or it's under a separate heading inside their IFRS 13 note. And what we're suggesting is that we could create separate tables and equivalent text block items, and we could move all of the existing elements that relate to the sensitivity analysis and the new ones we're proposing into these new tables. And an advantage would be that this would permit text block tagging, which in turn would make it easier for users of the data to locate the data and to extract it. But then again, a disadvantage is that it would add to the overall size of the taxonomy. So that's my overview of the 5 possible changes. And with that, I would like to open up for discussion of these 5 possible changes all at once. They're listed there again on slide 23. And I'll also be happy to take any questions you may have on these.
Michael. I'm not touching the button. But I think that actually this part is, in my opinion, I like the modeling, first of all, so I agree with the modeling. I think it's more dimensional than line item, and I'll explain in a second. But I think it also goes into a much bigger discussion. If I relate it to the banking supervision, there is the concept of stress testing. So putting all the particular line items on the report subject to changes in the variables that are impacting those line items. And I think this modeling goes much more into this predictive analytics, which we are performing not only on the fair value on IFRS 13, on IFRS 19 sections, which it applies directly to those, but we can actually apply this variability of inputs to more line items and try to look at the financial statement not as a very fixed view in a particular moment, but something more like a bit of a model, if you will, which may have multiple inputs, which I may basically play with in order to see what sort of what kind of impacts will it have on different positions. So I can probably model several inputs for my profit and loss. I can model for specific disclosures. I can see on the impact, for instance, of exchange rates, just to give one very tiny, simple variable there. There might be multiple ones which I can try to model to see how my entire financial position and performance behaves and how it actually sort of like reflects depending on these inputs. And here we are going into much more probabilistic approach to the figures. So I would say that this has a very good tie to our previous discussion about how modeling of IFRS data and structured data should go. If we consider this as a dimension of probability, everything that may potentially impact our line items, it doesn't only apply to fair value. It is a very, of course, very tightly coupled standard for this particular application. However, there are others. In insurance contracts, I would go into all the technical risk provisions that are particularly impactful. In banking specific disclosures, there will be plenty of them, so to say. And in banking regulatory world, they captured it all under the stress testing. So the entire thing is subject to variability rather than just portions which are particularly applicable. So I would just basically say to consider it in a broader perspective, because it may impact also technologies which you use later, particularly all these predictive algorithms which use variability as an input and then try to model the output depending on what is put in. So I think this has a particular significance to our consideration. Not to comment on one particular modeling, I would probably go on a modeling approach more towards dimensional that applies to the entire taxonomy, rather than more specifically line items to the IFRS 13 or 19 disclosures. However, for now, I understand the arguments for going with keeping line items because of familiarity of the taxonomy to our end users.
I think it goes even beyond a little bit, because what you're describing is a little bit different model to the whole taxonomy. I think what we currently are trying to do is just model the existing disclosures in IFRS standard, and I think we're going a little bit beyond that, which is a great idea, probably extends the scope of what we are trying to do.
No, that's why I said it's fine for now with this modeling, and I think it's a decent modeling. Takes into account pretty much everything that was necessary. It has a bigger dimension maybe for consideration for the future, which applies to the entire financial statement.
Now, I think there's one interesting point I hear there is, when we were doing this detailed modeling, we were asking the question, look, to apply this modeling is going to be quite a lot of tagging that needs to be done, and what is the benefit cost of this tagging? Do really investors and users want all this individual input stack, want all the values, or would they consume that data more in a narrative, qualitative way? And for me, I had no good answer to that question. I was confused myself. Now, what you're really saying, by really individual tagging, by breaking down each of the components, you think that's really useful because it can perform this type of predictive analytics, which has already been done within the EBA taxonomy. So that gives me some reassurance that we are going to the right direction. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Michael. Before I get into what I was going to say, I'll follow on to that. I think this one would have been modeled years ago, like you're proposing now, had the board not, and I'll blame the board, not been so much, stick to the standards, don't model anything beyond that early on, because this one, there's a tag for, the tags are tiny, and there's one for description of it. So it would have been modeled with dimensions had that been more freeform in the early days. But anyway, you're talking going beyond that, I get it.
We'll come to
it. Yeah, I get it. But my point, on slide 17, at the bottom, you're saying percentage item type or decimal item type, that in the bottom right quadrant, a 2% increase and an 8% discount rate. I don't think I've ever seen that in a financial report. In other words, they say the discount rate will increase 2%, in other words, from 5 to 7, as opposed to 2% of a 5%. But I'm wondering, did you see some of that? Or?
Yes, I did see some of that.
Okay.
And I saw some cases where it wasn't actually clear what the company meant.
Oh, really?
But I did see cases where they said an increase by 2% and they meant the relative increase.
Yeah, okay. Given that, then, it makes sense to put a decimal and a percent item type. I think let's say those two are sitting out there. If someone says, now I'm tagging something, the disclosure says it's a 2% increase, meaning going from 5% to 7%, 2% increase. I'm going to look at those two tags. I'm going to pick the percent item type, right? Because it's a percent, 2%. And that's not, that would be wrong, because you're supposed to take the decimal item type in that situation. I wish I had a solution for that, other than maybe put it in the preparer's guide, because that's a place for it. But someone's got to be looking pretty closely and deeply to find that in a preparer's guide when they're tagging. So given that this is a common thing, we do need those two. But it's going to be weird when someone has a percent change and uses, and is supposed to use a decimal item type. So, warning there. Second, in the employee benefits, tagging this same item is there, but I think it's only a percent item. It's only one of the two. I don't know which one. Percent item type, probably. So, a little bit of inconsistency. I mean, theoretically, you should add a decimal item type over in the employee benefits tagging, but that seems unnecessary. I don't think the two are necessary anyway, but since it's there, it's probably better to put two and then one. Anyway, just pointing out a bit of inconsistency. Maybe you already knew that. You're shaking your head.
Yeah, we knew that. Okay. The problem is that we really would have to do that in the common reporting practice of the employee benefits.
Yeah.
See, is that similar pattern then, and only based on that could we then have enough justification to include in the taxonomy.
Mm-hmm. I'm okay leaving one over employee benefits, because I don't think there was ever a need for two over there.
And I think with the employee benefits, because this is a new element with the new tagging, we don't create also the problems with retagging and remapping. I think doing that for employee benefits is also creating this additional burden, which also we would need to consider, but we are aware of the inconsistency.
Okay. There's three existing tags. Are those going to be moved out of the section they're currently in and then put in that new section?
In that.
Right. You're not leaving them in both. Okay. And I completely agree with putting in a new section. This is going to be very easy to tag here forward, whereas before it was, you looked at it and said, you spent 20 minutes trying to find it in the taxonomy and finally said it's not there, and then you'd spend another 20 minutes or 5 hours or whatever to tag with extensions. You know, quite painful. This is very welcome and will reduce the extension rate substantially in this area, of course, from 100% down to hopefully zero. That's all. But anyway, of all the, if you told me what section would you pick to reduce extensions first, I would have said the sensitivity analysis, because it's, yeah, it's 100% extension area today.
For fair value.
I'm all for this. What?
For only for fair value, or also for the other sensitivity analysis? When you say 100% extension rate, you mean the sensitivity analysis only for fair value, or is that also a problem for the other sensitivity?
Like market risk and all that kind of stuff as well. Mm-hmm. There's plenty of extensions there too, but I was thinking fair value first. Yeah.
Thank you, Lou. Chi, you still got a question or comment?
One question. You want to choose one of them from these five solutions?
No, we would do all of them. We're
all
proposing
of them.
To do all of them.
Okay. Just I wanted to make sure.
Thanks, Chief. And Ashok? I think you were next between you and Dave. But I think you were next, Ashok. Yeah.
It's going to take really kind of the basic thing. So if you just refer to the table on page 19, the slide 19, and it's nicely, you know, the broken down between favorable, unfavorable, and so on and so forth. But if you really look at those numbers, they are actually the fair value. The underlying, you know, the accounting concept is a fair value. Right?
Broken up into OCI and profit or loss.
But line item should be fair value of whatever it is, correct?
Yes.
And now I just want to try to understand. Now we adding another line item on top of the another line item, favorable changes and unfavorable. The changes are like an activity, correct? They're not accounting concept.
We're not adding favorable changes or unfavorable changes. This is an example that I pulled from an annual report. The elements that we're proposing to add are on slide 20 and 21. And so we're proposing to add, so the element is actually called increase, decrease in fair value measurement. So it would still be called an increase, decrease in fair value measurement. But at the sort of end of the element, we would say reflected in profit or loss or reflected in other comprehensive income.
So we're focusing on the effect on fair value that has on the statement of comprehensive income, because we found that disclosure being commonly reported.
I just really, because in my mind, if I see the table, it tells me that this is the fair value. And then whatever the changes are like a kind of the activity. But still, whatever those activities are, they are still fair value of those financial instruments. Various level of valuation you've done. But underlying the fundamental concept is fair value of those, you know, the assets or liability or whatever it may be. And now we're adding another line item on top of that. That's why I'm just getting confused about that.
But what we propose here is the effect of change in fair value. So if we have a fair value at the opening, let's say 100, and then we have 200 at the end, then there is an increase in fair value. And now this effect of increase of 100, let's say, now prepares separate between profit or loss and the other comprehensive income. And that's the disclosure that we're now thinking about. So it's not the fair value that is on the balance sheet, but it is a sensitivity effect on the profit or loss, potential effect on the profit or loss, and OCI. Does that help?
That helps. And if you could turn your card down, Lou, and
I got another comment.
You got nothing?
I have a question. How does more individual consumption of this data, right? So if this changes over time, first you have decrease and an increase, and so how would you then analyze these different line items? Because you get different tags altogether of this data, right?
Well, so the line item is, I think, saying increase and then in brackets decrease in fair value. So it says if we have an increase in observable input, for example, then it causes increase or decrease. So it will be the same line item. It will just have a different sign.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes, that's by my question to me.
So are you more worried because what I'm hearing from Ashok and from you, you say really, okay, a user wants to see, okay, was the increase, decrease in fair value. Some companies may report that as a total figure. Some companies may break it down in other comprehensive income and a profit and loss account. Are you more saying, look, okay, as a user, as I'm going to have one item to...
It's a change, right? It's a change.
Yeah.
Changes. Fluctuates every year, but I have one reference to the change.
So would what Ashok said, and I'm just drawing as a question because maybe that I don't understand. Are you saying is more of a question that for this breakdown between other comprehensive income and profit and loss account, we have used like flat modeling? Would you prefer more a dimension modeling? Is that the issue? Because with a dimension model, you can use a dimension to qualify an input within a consumption tool. Is that what you're questioning here? I'm not sure. I'm just throwing it out as a question here.
I'm just wondering how this would impact, say, the consumption of the data. Mm-hmm. I don't have the answer. I mean, that's why I put the question.
The consumption would be that if as investors are interested in increasing, decreasing fair value, I would have to work with all these line items, and probably in my tool I may do something clever
that's
with
what
it.
I mean.
To present, or you could say, look, if you did it on a dimensional model, then it would be just a qualifying. So in a tool, you could say, then, okay, I have my total increase and decrease in fair value. Show me now, click right, show me now the difference between, okay, how this was broken up. I think you can do it both with line item modeling and dimensional modeling. It's just a question of how this consumption tool would then display the result to the end user, really, I think.
But then you put quite some burden on the analysis.
Yeah.
That's what so I think it's good to consider that. What how is this impacting this kind of analysis?
I don't think it has a significant impact. I think that I think it's going to be more like a consumption tool that I would have to present this data in a format that can be done.
The model, right?
Yeah. It's not the model here, I think.
You're okay?
Well.
Did you get your question answered? You rephrased it. It's true.
Yeah, so I think this agenda paper 5 is the biggest one. I didn't think there too much time to read through it because I think the language is quite clear and the logic is very straightforward. Thank you. So, we agree with all the suggestions by the staff. Only one suggestion for suggestion point two, because previously we have the element increase, decrease, and then we suggest to add two elements: increase due to increase and increase due to decrease. Right. So I think maybe because we have the background, we have read the 40-page. Slide deck, but I think for users, for preparers, they may be confused by with these three different elements. So we would suggest an additional guidelines to be provided somewhere to tell the preparers what's the difference, right? So my understanding is if they use the previous one, so we shouldn't use the newly suggested ones, right?
I guess the distinction between those elements is whether you have the direction specified or not. And what we have found and what we modeled in the past was that we were thinking that preparers would present the sensitivity analysis with a multiple changes of the inputs. So, for example, increasing discount rate and at the same time decreases something else. That will, in effect, in total, increase or decrease in fair value in this amount. What we have found out is that entities commonly actually do it by the input. And then when you have the single input, you can say a single change in discount rate will cause a single change in fair value. And we think that if preparers will read the labels, that should be clear, I think, unless you disagree with me. So if you read the label, you will see that one will be the increase, decrease in one of the input, and the other one will be increase or decrease in fair value due to change in inputs, multiple inputs. So we hope that it should be.
I mean, no matter what would be the form of this kind of explanation, so we need to provide it.
What we are also planning to do is we are going to, like for any other update, we are planning to publish the proposed taxonomy update and the taxonomy update. So these are like documents, PDF documents, by the way, that really describe the changes we are making.
Yeah.
And in these proposed taxonomy update documents, we can include some of the examples that were already put in our presentation to make it clear. So that's one kind of documentation or guide a preparer can use. We also have within the taxonomy the documentation label, and the documentation label is like additional explanation as to what this, the meaning of that element could be. So I think we have at this moment, in fact, already two ways that we can provide some additional guidance, yeah, which hopefully will help preparers if we get some feedback that based on these two methods, it's still not clear, then we can consider to include additional examples. We also, I believe, have illustrative examples to prepare their
measurements. IFRS 13 has illustrative examples, but not of a quantitative sensitivity analysis.
Fine.
There's
so
only
a
narrative one.
So would this
potentially be a candidate for inclusion in the preparer's guide, some sort of guidance on how to use these if there is that potential for confusion?
Normally we do for the preparer's guide, we have said the preparer's guide gives some general guidelines.
Yeah.
So we want to continue the preparer's guide to be general. One thing we have considered in the past and which you have suggested as well is to possibly to provide implementation guides in the form that the FASB currently do is really for those areas where experience highlights that there's not a lot of correct tagging going on, yeah, that we may say, okay, we provide an additional guide specific on fair value measurements, which describes again, which provides more examples and so on. So we can use additional, on top of the post taxonomy update document, we can produce additional guides as well. Now, I think we were already talking, and in the post taxonomy update document, we were also trying to explain some of the changes through some fictitious examples. So again,
which is great, and so I think this suggestion reminds me of another question. So that question is for XI. So I know that there is no Boolean data type.
Mm-hmm. Boolean data type.
For source of truth, right? So there's no such a data type in XBRL specifically. Why not? Because
it's in the data types registry. It's in the data types registry. Can be used.
Can be used.
In the data types registry. It's not in the base spec, but it's in the registry. So you can use that data type anywhere. I'm 90% sure.
But from a programmer's perspective, maybe if you want to indicate the relationship between the input and the changes in fair value. So maybe a Boolean data type can be more useful to express this kind of relationship. If it's false, okay, it's negative,
yeah.
True, positive, yeah.
Yeah, it could be some kind of qualifier, kind of thing. Item qualify attribute. Mm-hmm. Rather than having lots of line items, of course, yeah. It doesn't exist at the moment, so it's not an
option. I think this kind of
it does. Yeah.
Well, it doesn't exist in our taxonomy, so this is something that we would need to incorporate.
Yeah.
But we can think about it going forward.
Okay. Thank you. Good point. And I think we've got one more second time round.
Okay. The piece you're writing text for the piece that goes through OCI and the P&L. I don't. It's pretty rare, I think, that there's fair value change that goes through OCI. But I'm going to ask. I guess you've seen some. I mean, I realize it can exist. So if somebody discloses, because of the input change, the change in fair value was 100, which they mean through the P&L, because that's very, very, very common. Do you use the tag for change in fair value, or do you use the tag for change in fair value through the P&L? They're kind of the same in that situation. Maybe that's a regulator thing to give guidance, but it kind of fits both tags.
No, it's good. And I think we need to have a discussion within the team side.
Yeah.
Because we, in principle, we could put in our documentation label to say something. It is the thing to marry. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And maybe it is for the regulator to say, tag it twice or use the more specific, more general, whatever. I don't know. But
that's what I'm thinking. I don't think it's the only situation in taxonomy where you can find this situation. So we probably need to handle that more holistically.
I think in the U.S. GAAP taxonomy, I believe there's not a distinction between P&L and OCI. It's just change in fair value. I'm 90% sure of that. So it just gets, yeah. And if there is something through OCI, and you create an extension, I guess, which I don't think I've ever seen, but I'm sure it exists. Because it makes sense that it would exist. Anyway, let's leave that to the regulator then.
So there was a second half of your presentation?
Yes, so very quickly...
I'm sorry.
I have a very quick question, actually. Oh, if I may. I was wondering, in your review of common practice, do you, and coming up with new suggestions for tax, do you review prudential reporting as well? Could that feed you into your analysis as well?
So I think in the current common practice, we are focusing on the IFRS disclosures and the IFRS reporting, and that's what we add to the IFRS.
We think it would be useful I realize it's different streams of reporting and everything, but as you're surely aware, preparers try to streamline as much as possible and use the same set of information for feeding into the two reportings. So for as much as possible, trying to align the common practice and the tax coming out of this kind of analysis also with the prudential reporting, wherever it's possible and whenever it's appropriate, obviously, but keeping an eye on the fact that PREPARE is also dealing with other types of reporting, and that might feed you into your analysis.
I think so far the objective of the IFRS taxonomy is to illustrate or reflect the IFRS based reporting, so that's what we've been focusing on so far, and that's how we do the our common practice.
An additional problem we have that there are different kind of prudential regulators around the world, so if there's no consistency in this taxonomy, it will be difficult. I agree in principle with your suggestion, Anna. I know that preparers in Europe have also raised this as a concern, but it's not an easy issue to tackle. Mm.
Good to hear you're aware of the difficulties preparing space whenever that is possible.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay. Yes. So there's one more question that we wanted to ask about the IFRS 13 disclosures, and it's about the modeling for the value of the significant unobservable inputs used to measure fair value. That's on slide 25. And currently, this disclosure, as you can see, are modeled using a number of line items. But as we already discussed, what we are proposing is to move all those line items to the axis and being the members. So now the question is whether we can actually change that modeling from line items to dimensional modeling. We think that there are a number of arguments in favor. That's on slide 27. First of all, we think it will be easier to consume because now all the members will be aligned to, or linked to the single axis, and also it would result in fewer elements in total because we would delete line items, which I think is currently 10 in total. So and got them for the liabilities, assets, and for the equity, so it's in total 30 elements less. But what we are concerned about is, again, because this modeling is already out there in the market, it would result in retagging for preparers and remapping for users. So the question is really whether you think those arguments in favor are... is the benefit of getting that is higher than the cost of changing the model modeling at that very moment. So the question is just below. The question is, do you agree that we should retain those elements, or do you think we should actually do dimensional modeling?
You were open, or?
Yeah. Yes.
Michael, do you have a comment?
Very quick one. I think we've discussed that in the past, but in case, is it used heavily by the users currently? Because that's the biggest question when it comes to changes. If this portion of the taxonomy with the line items is heavily utilized by our users, I think you know a couple of those regulatory projects, then I would be concerned about changing. But if it is not, then we do not see the impact, right? So perhaps that might be an avenue for endorsing the change.
Well, it is a current requirement in IFRS 13, so it is used, but it depends on the different elements. As you can see on the slide 2B4, there is a number of different ones. So depending on the type of input, it varies. So interest rate is used quite heavily, but maybe... average.
I mean, clearly, the dimensional model is smarter and more efficient, right? So now, if it is currently used by with the line item models, I would then refrain maybe from changing or plan it accordingly. But if it's not really particularly, you know, utilized disclosure, then we should switch to the better one.
I think you can see really the type, it's really typical disclosed in the notes to the primary financial statement. Based on that, I think at the moment it's mostly used by those preparers who are now filing their expert update with the SSC. So I think the impact will be mostly on those preparers.
I
assume that investors are not starting to consume this data, so I would say it's on those preparers that are now currently filing with the SSC. I would say that would be the impact.
I see.
Yeah. Chief, you were...
One thing I would like to share with you, usually the regulator or the more the technology people say that if just making something model using the dimension and the line items and seems very efficient. I don't know about the user side or taxonomy maker side, but the user side always... not actually meaning that the decreasing job. I mean, we always have to handling data, the multiple number of the members and also line items. So nothing changed if you are organizing it on using dimension, but still we are multiply on how many, so the number of the elements is actually not decreasing. So maybe you can guess that. And another question is this maybe it's not last change? The financial statement always changing, so that we can't take the efficient way any times. So that, and also that I was wondering that you were outreaching about IOP 13, especially the sensitivities. So that, and you maybe the half years ago, you asked me to the users, is it really user using this data or not? So that someday those disclosure changes. So that you maybe if you already guess that, maybe you should implement it to this the expectation changes on there. So this is two things that I would like to share with from user side.
Completed the post implementation.
Yeah, the post-implementation review was completed, and I think at the March board meeting there was a decision that no further standard setting will be done because the standard is working well. We might refer to some other projects for maybe some examples or something like that, but no changes to the standard as such.
Okay, but maybe we don't know about the 5 years from now, or so that anyway, any types of the because something coming, something new thing is coming. So not about this IF-13, only IF-13. So that the just only I want to share with you is we can't take the efficient way any station. So as it's a little bit similar like what Michael said, if currently it's working, even though it seems like not efficient, sometimes. You know what I'm saying? It's working, maybe it doesn't need to change sometimes. But it seems very nice. So it's very difficult to say. And one more thing that I want to share with you. For the user side, 5 years is not so long. Once we build up the system and it's, you know, the usual user computing the past financial statement, past 5 years or 10 years. So usually, if once we set up to the way to use data, the 5 years is very short. So that the changing accounting standard changing basically changing so quickly.
So considering all that, do you think we should continue to use line items, or do you think we should change the dimension?
To tell the truth, basically I like line items. More easy to happen. Any change to happen, we can still continue to.
I don't hold.
Sorry, I think you switched yourself off again.
One second.
Okay,
you're going together.
So I don't hold any position on this. I'm neither in favor or against it. But I just want to make one point, or I want just want to discuss with you the second point for against. Yeah. So I think this. So whether this is a decimal or percent type may be a matter when it is for the change. The change, of course, is it matters just as you explained. So ambiguity. Right? We don't know if this is an absolute value or relative value. However, I think for the value itself, I don't know if it matters. My point is maybe the second reason does not exist. Yeah.
So you're not concerned about this point?
Yeah, I am not concerned about this point. If it's changed, yes, there could be ambiguity. Yeah.
Thank you. Lou?
Yeah. You know, I'm not strongly either one way or the other, but I'm more... leave it alone, leave it as line items, because it is currently working, and that was criteria of Chi and Michal both. Is it working? I think it is working because they're easy to find, and you can see that section, grab the line item, put the value in there, and move along. I think the biggest factors are these things variable, such that one company reports input ABC, the next one puts DEF, the next one, you know, they're all so different. Then it would be members, I think, because you can't predict the line items, but here I think you can predict interest rates going to be one of them. Weighted average cost of capital is probably another. So it works. I haven't any problem with this section. It seems to be working fine.
So, Lou, if I reminded you that we changed hours to dimensions last year.
Yeah, U.S. GAAP, these guys changed the members. I voted don't do that.
Okay. Never mind.
No, I did. I remember the discussion. Yeah. And so so in IFRS, you either have an extension line item if we leave it, or an extension member if you change it. But... to me, this works as is, so I'd leave it. It would be ideal in all situations if U.S. GAAP and IFRS and UK GAAP, and all those were the same line items versus numbers. And we should always try to work to get that, but it's not a requirement, right? I mean, it's a nice to have.
I was just making an observation.
I know. I was thinking that myself, actually.
One day.
He's thinking it's a way to get you to switch back.
Yes.
Thanks, Lou.
Okay.
Yeah, you okay?
Yeah.
Lou, can I just add, so if our common reporting practice would highlight that also a great variability used in the input to disclose the values, would that change your mind? Because that was one of the reasons that I hear that from US GAAP, that changed their modeling two dimensions.
It would have to be significant variability, not just some. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying that because I think this section does work. I mean, no one's had problems with it, other than maybe some extensions due to variability. But that'd be an extension member anyway. I guess the bigger thing is the U.S. companies have tagged using this, so it's kind of painful. Not that painful, but now we all of them have to switch the members for a reason that isn't that intense.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks. Nothing more from the staff? One with Lou and John?
I wanted to reinforce what Michal said, which is perhaps the staff could think about developing an approach or a methodology that allows you to measure the impact of a change. Because I don't think you currently have facility to see what is being submitted to regulators in a simple environment. Once you have that capability, Lewis never starts a presentation without showing off his statistics about how a particular concept is being used.
We are jealous, by the way.
You guys need to get to the same place, I think. And that's a slight challenge. We're happy to work with you if it helps. So that you've got access to all of this information. You know how many companies have reported in this fashion, and maybe you can put some metrics around it. Because as IFAC has, as Mike keeps pointing out, being telling the marketplace, differences cost money. And wouldn't it be good to measure that?
And we definitely hope to do that more in the future as well.
Good point.
It's just a plus one for that idea.
Thanks, Sean.
We've got just one last question. So we've been talking about IFRS 13, and we're going to bring some more in the future. But the question is, did you observe maybe now in the market there is any need for additional common reporting practice analysis for additional elements that you know that are commonly extended nowadays, so we can look through that and maybe add some or change the modeling of some other disclosures?
I refer my previous answer. You've got to do it in a disciplined manner and look at what's being filed. And I think you should do it rather than ask others to do it for you, because then you've got something that's consistent and you can develop a methodology and measure.
Yeah, I think it's a good point. The question is more whether you already observe some of the parts of the financial statement that we specifically should focus on, or whether it's just a general goal.
I have observed some. I do not have a list with me today to provide.
We can do it offline.
Good.
Yeah, happy to. Kai?
2 points. So I've observed some as well. I'll share a list and specific reference to IFRS taxonomy. Something else to pick up, which is that there are more IFRS taxonomy regulatory extensions that are in use around the world than there are adopters directly of the IFRS taxonomy. And they've picked up many areas of these kind of practice. Unfortunately, I can't answer your question specifically, which is, are they actually in use? I know that they exist in those regulators' taxonomy, but are they used widely for reporting? I don't have access to the data, back to what John was saying. But in terms of your common practice analysis, I don't think that those taxonomies, for example, the UK IFRS taxonomy, is actually part of your inputs to consider. And I think perhaps it should be, because even as a starting point, it allows you to ask the question, okay, they thought it was worthwhile what data did they have that justified adding it to their taxonomy, perhaps because their process and that aspect of common practice was implemented quicker than here at the ISP.
I think our common practice analysis is not the analysis of the taxonomies as such. What we are doing is really going through the IFRS-based financial statements, and that's what we're analyzing. We're going through them, we're looking at the labels and the numbers that are there, and that is basis for our common practice analysis.
And that's ultimately the same basis, although sometimes model financial statements used by other taxonomy authors.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some similar work to look at. It doesn't necessarily inform a quota or any statistics around how often it's in use, but they have a similar justification model.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree, Kali, and we brought this up already, I think, in the past on some of our IDCG discussions, that we have, like, many regulators using the taxonomy, and it's quite difficult for us as well to analyze all these extensions and to say, look, how much is used, how much is not used for each of these individual regulatory extensions. So although it's very worthwhile exercise to do what we said in the past, look, please, as regulators, yeah, or as someone using the IFRS taxonomy, also inform us, work with us to really identify areas where additional common practice may be required. And we have had some regulators who have provided us with some, using their database queries, some aggregated outputs from, okay, this seem to be areas that could be of use based on the filing and the data we have. So I see it more as, rather than us just investigate everything, I see it more as a two-way process. You're using taxonomy, please also work with us for comment on our consultations. If we put out a common practice analysis like for IFRS 13, everyone is welcome, and we really would like people to comment. So if you are a regulator, I would also invite you to comment on our proposed taxonomy updates, because it's not just a one-way process, really.
So, of course, I agree. It's collusive to work with other accounting standard setters and regulators in that way. But I disagree that it's a lot of work to look at other taxonomy examples that are based on the IFRS taxonomy. At a very basic but technical level, any line item which exists of the same name is obviously original. Anything which is new, almost always against their own namespace, has been something which they've added, either reflecting new IFRSs early or common practice locally in that domain. So at a snapshot, literally at looking at the taxonomy, it should be fairly quick and very easy to consume.
And we do that to some level, but it's a two-way process. Mm-hmm.
Okay, thanks, Kylie.
Sure. As you think about areas where you might want to add common practice elements, one thing you might think about is areas where investors or data consumers are looking for data and they're having trouble finding it in the structured data, either because there's extensions or variability in tagging. And so we can tell you what's in the filings, but there's also that consumption piece that might drive where you look next for.
Any suggestions there, Suzanne? Because we have tried to engage with investors. We find that so far it's yes, you get some feedback, but it's still not that engagement I would like there to be really. Now we engage very well with regulators. I think we prepare, we get them more on board because they have to tag, but we still find it quite difficult to get input of users really.
And one of the things that I've found is you can't get meaningful input from users by asking them to respond in writing to a comment request, right? They're just not, odds are not good. I've had better luck talking to them about their data needs more in a more open-ended way, mm-hmm. And that tends to be just one-on-one conversations. So I don't have a great answer. I wish I did. I don't think we'd be having some of these discussions if we had better answers.
Thank you.
Thanks, Susan. I think Chi was up, and then Michael. I think so.
I have to be near about future common practice project. I understand that ISV do not provide any best practice of disclosure, but without the discussion about best practice of the disclosure, it's quite difficult to discussing about common practice, I believe. So if, for example, if you're researching to what type of the disclosure is seen on IFRS financial statement, but still there's many not good disclosure existing in the market. So that, for example, sometimes a company disclosing, it's just allowed, it could still comply on IFRS, but not so good explanations. So that I don't want you to choose some items only about the reason of the number of the disclosure is many or not. So I think that common practice items could be some kind of the best practice of the disclosure. So maybe it's better to discuss about the disclosure first, then and choosing some common practice. So this one, the opinion. And another is IFRS taxonomy has items named the profit from operating activity in your taxonomy. But profit from operating activity is quite, I think, difficult items to define, because IFRS itself doesn't have these definitions, in my understanding. So, and it's not common practice. It still says that it's coming from standards. So it's a little bit tricky. So easy to, how do you say, makes people misunderstand. So maybe you are going to discuss about MPM. At that time, I think it's better to reconsider about these items, profit from operating activities. Because maybe you are talking with other meetings to investors, it's quite difficult to define operating activities. So maybe it's better to check.
I think it's a great point, and I think we actually try. We're starting to talk to the technical staff that is now doing the project on the primary financial statement. As we discussed at the very beginning of this session, we think there might be quite a big influence of the taxonomy and of the standard in between each other on how users are consuming the management performance measures and how we can reflect them in taxonomy. I think it's a bit early stage now. It's still in the developing of this project, but we are working together to make sure that it kind of works for the digital consumption as well as possibly PDF consumptions in the future as well, if that's going to be decided. But it's a great point. We have that into consideration.
I understand it's hard to decide to remove existing tag, but the current tag is a little bit, will be some kind of conflict with new presentations.
Yeah, we also planning to review the IFRS taxonomy with the technical staff and just work together on the example, maybe possible the common practice in the future. This is still to be decided. It's a bit still too early to give a conclusive view, but we are very well aware of that project, and we will work together to make sure that it works for the digital reporting as well.
Thank you, Chi. Michael.
So I wanted to ask on this thing, which is much debated, integrated reporting. Why is sustainability reporting? Has there been any plans regarding adding any disclosures for this sort of green, colorful finance? Because there's one right now directive that is happening in the European Union that is parallel to the developments in ESMA, it requires the listed companies to report significant portions related to all the sustainability factors. Has there been any considerations whether there are any common practice elements appearing within the financial statements that are actually parallel to these requirements?
Well, we didn't take any project like that in the past, but it's an interesting thing, and we will consider.
Okay.
Good. Thanks, Michael. Anything further from... No. Great. Thanks.